Welcome to the Healthy Skin Show with Jennifer Fugo, where we're flipping everything you've been told about your chronic skin issues upside down and connecting you with alternative solutions your dermatologist never told you about.
Welcome back to episode number 203 of the Healthy Skin Show. In today's episode, we are going to start a deep dive into a very controversial topic, covering licorice root and other adaptogenic herbs and how they work in the body, specifically for those who are going through topical steroid withdrawal, also known as TSW. I realize that there is a lot of heated arguments and a lot of feelings on both sides. People who are really afraid, to be honest with you, of using these particular botanicals, and others who are just totally confused and overwhelmed. The reality is that nutritional biochemistry and even just biochemistry or hormonal biochemistry in the body can be extremely complicated. Complicated to the point where at times I even need to ask for help because it's confusing to me. And I've had something like 8 or 9 semesters of nutritional biochemistry in my grad school program. And there are other times where botanicals and their herbal constituents can also feel very confusing. It's easy to assume because you might see part of a word like steroid in an adaptogen's active constituent, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it is a steroid. And it's difficult for someone who doesn't fully understand all the ins and outs of this. When you've been traumatized, as soon as you see that word, that can trigger you to become afraid, and I understand it. I became aware that perhaps the way that licorice root specifically was being discussed within the TSW community that was fueling so much fear might not be 100% accurate. And so I thought it was time for me to go down that rabbit hole, to start asking some hard questions and to doing research to better understand exactly what licorice root does in the body and how it impacts cortisol and your adrenal glands. This interview led me to reaching out to Dr. Carrie Jones. Many of you know her. She's been on the show before. In order to have an insightful, balanced, non-emotional conversation about this whole topic, because she really does truly understand the biochemistry of what's going on in addition to these botanicals and how they impact different biochemical pathways, how they impact the adrenals. And she's also familiar with this particular topic of TSW, because remember, we've actually done podcasts about it in the past, which we'll link to in the show notes. The purpose of this conversation is to add to the conversation from a perspective that is based in science. I will apologize up front if some of the things we talk about might be a little over your head. We really, really tried to boil them down and provide you not only the correct terminology, but also simplistic analogies so that you could understand this a little bit better and really make an educated decision for yourself about whether you feel comfortable utilizing these herbs as part of your healing process. But that said, there's no judgment if even after listening to this, you're still not comfortable using them. Or on the flip side, if all of a sudden you go, you know what, I want to give that a try. There's no judgment. This isn't about being right or wrong. The fact remains that there is still not enough research out there to definitively know how to essentially fix or stop or heal, whatever you want to describe it as, TSW. We are still too early in the game at this point to know the exact way forward. We're all still trying to figure it out. And the more information that we can pull together, the more minds we can pull together, hopefully, we can find solutions and answers that help people more. Because at the end of the day, what is most important is for someone to get to a place as quickly as possible where their body can start to function healthfully on its own again. Because this process of TSW takes people time in order for their adrenal glands, their immune system, for all different sorts of systems that have gone haywire or offline to come back online and start working together in harmony again. And that process is one that at this point, there's no roadmap. You have some folks that say you just have to give it time, and other folks who are 8 years in feeling incredibly frustrated and are looking for other solutions and wondering if maybe they missed something. Maybe there were other options along the way. So this conversation is here purely as information. It's not meant to prove or disprove anything, but to bring to the table some science so that you can make ultimately the best decision for yourself. And because I know that this interview may be highly scrutinized by some, and I don't blame you for scrutinizing it, I am going to share with you all of the studies and research that I have looked at in the show notes so that you can look at it yourself and see exactly what myself and even Dr. Carrie Jones has looked at. And one final point, this conversation was so important to me that I didn't want to rush through it. I wanted to make sure that I had all of my questions outlined ahead of time. That way I could ask Dr. Jones everything. Everything, questions that have been submitted through Instagram, questions from my clients, questions from colleagues. I wanted to get through it all to make this the most comprehensive resource I possibly could in the amount of time that I had Dr. Jones present in front of me for. So because of that, this interview went long, and so it is going to be cut into two pieces. This episode is part one of the conversation, and part two will be in the next episode. For those of you who may not have heard Dr. Carrie Jones on the show before, she is an internationally recognized speaker, consultant, and educator on the topic of women's health and hormones. She graduated from the National University of Natural Medicine, School of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland, Oregon, where she completed her two-year residency in women's health, hormones, and endocrinology. Later, she graduated from Grand Canyon University's Master's of Public Health program with a goal of doing more international education. She was adjunct faculty for many years teaching gynecology and advanced endocrinology and fertility, and has been the medical director for two large integrative clinics in Portland. She is currently the medical director for Precision Analytical Incorporated, creators of the Dutch hormone test. So without further ado, let's dive in to part one of this conversation. Dr. Jones, thank you so much for being back here on the show. I know this is going to be a hot topic, but you always deliver. So I appreciate your presence today.
Oh my gosh. Okay. First of all, we're friends. So call me Carrie. You know, I'm informal.
I know.
Even though it's the podcast, you don't have to refer to me as Dr. Jones, but thank you for having me back. You know, I love to talk about this.
I know. So today we're going to be talking a lot about, our adrenals and a whole bunch of other things associated with them. So since this is kind of a lengthy conversation and it's going to involve a lot of terms that people may or may not be familiar with, let's start off laying some groundwork. So everybody who's curious about licorice root and TSW and stuff, just stay tuned, but we got to lay the groundwork first. So, Carrie, what are corticosteroids? What are they? What do they do?
Right. So let's even go up a level just so people realize we have steroid hormones. Steroid hormones come from cholesterol. So that's your cortisol, that's your testosterone, that's your estrogen, estradiol, estrone, progesterone. So when we talk about steroid hormones, when you hear people say, I'm going to test my steroid hormones, you may confuse them and think, oh no, that's like steroids. I have took steroid cream. That's bad. But really in the body, you do make steroid hormones. And obviously they're very important. Then when we specifically talk about cortisol is a glucocorticosteroid. So it's a very specific branch of the steroid family. Cortico, because it comes from the cortex of the adrenal glands, so it's sort of a location part of its name. Gluco, because that's what its number one job is. If cortisol had a resume, it's like top skill set is I help you manage your glucose, which a lot of people don't realize. Obviously, glucose is affected by a lot of things, and cortisol affects a lot of things, inflammation, infection, what have you, energy. Glucose is the number one thing cortisol goes after. So glucocorticosteroid is a glucose managing hormone from the cortex of the adrenal gland under the umbrella of steroid hormone. That is cortisol. And you make it naturally.
And what is cortisone? Because I didn't, you know, until I really dove into even the testing side of things, I was just like, cortisol. And then I slowly realized, I was like, it's not just cortisol.
Cortisone is the inactive form of cortisol. Now, people get this confused a lot because they're thinking, oh, I use hydrocortisone cream. Is that the same thing? No, it's a terrible naming thing by pharmaceutical companies. Hydro, when you put the hydro in front of it, hydrocortisone is really cortisol, but they don't call it cortisol cream. They call it hydrocortisone cream. Cortisone in your body is inactive. So when cortisol is doing its job and the body's like, okay, thank you very much, that's enough. We have little enzymes that turn it off like a switch. And when it turns off, it flips into cortisone. Cortisone is dead in the water. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't activate anything. But then the body can reactivate. It can flip the switch back on again like a little light, and it will flip back into cortisol.
And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. So I've also read some concern from people just about the mineralocorticoids. What are those in comparison?
Yeah. So they have a lot to do with your saltwater balance. So your aldosterone with an A, aldosterone, also comes out of your adrenal glands, just a different layer. And it binds to your mineralocorticoid receptors and helps you with saltwater balance. The problem is cortisol can also bind to those same receptors. Cortisol has its own receptors. It has its own home called glucocorticoreceptors. But cortisol can be like real nosy and like go in its neighbor's home, which is the mineralocorticoid receptors, and bind to it and affect it as well, which is why when people have a lot of cortisol, sometimes they say, I have a problem with my saltwater balance. I'm puffy. I'm swollen. I retain water because cortisol's going to the neighbor house as opposed to staying in its own house.
I love your analogies. They're so great. So, okay. So, and then the last thing I want to define here is, well, not define, but let's talk a little bit about licorice root, because everybody knows where this conversation is going. There's a lot of controversy around licorice root and using it for people who've had excessive, and I'm going to say excessive can mean different things for different people because we don't know what excessive is for any particular person, but an excessive exposure to steroids, whether they're topical or like you and I talked about this, the different, you can have reactions to different forms of steroid exposure. And so what is licorice root in terms of it being like a botanical or herbal supplement, so to speak?
Yeah. So licorice has the, one of the big active ingredients in it is glyceriza. And licorice, that glyceriza, it helps to keep cortisol active and delay its breakdown. And so it keeps it hanging around your body longer. And so if you are a deactivator, so you're a person who tends to deactivate the cortisone, it will stop that. It will help you keep cortisol around longer. And if you're a breaker downer, then it will stop that and it'll, or slow it down, I should say. It'll help keep your cortisol floating around the body a lot longer. And licorice root has been used traditionally, obviously, for so many years in the herbal plant medicinal world. I mean, way longer than you and I have been alive, in a lot of like hundreds and hundreds of years. And herbalists often call licorice a great harmonizer. So you will often see like a tiny bit of licorice in teas, even in teas that are supposed to be sleepy time teas, or you'll find them in immune support, or you'll find it in an adrenal support or stress support. Because as several master herbalists I've studied from said, Licorice just helps other plants play well together. It's just a really nice harmonizer. But you can go to the other end of the spectrum. You can take hundreds of milligrams, which is a lot, to really like knock the cortisol system over the head and make sure you keep cortisol around in your body longer. Licorice, I mean, we'll get into, but it's not without its risks. You have to be careful. It can raise blood pressure because cortisol can raise blood pressure, and it can deplete potassium, meaning you'll lose more potassium than you want to, and now you're potassium deficient, which could land you in the hospital. So you have to keep an eye on that. But it is dose dependent and is length of time dependent. Like taking a sleepy time tea with a tiny bit of licorice in, it's probably not going to affect your potassium.
All right. So let's set the stage here. So in terms of like a Dutch test, which is like such a great visual for, we get to see on the cortisol awakening response, especially mm-hmm. that one panel where you'll see the line for cortisol and you'll also see the line for cortisone. And then you'll get a chance to see like, what do you shift more or less to? And so mm-hmm. in someone who has this really, like their body essentially became addicted to having that hydrocortisone exposure, what does the pattern, well, I guess let's say, what is the pattern normally supposed to look like? And what does it look like in somebody who ends up in this particular state where their body is like seeking out essentially that exogenous form of cortisol?
So as we know, when you take steroid hormone, like prednisone as an example, or maybe you take fluticasone or you take a steroid inhaler, that steroid is way, 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 way more potent than cortisol. It doesn't look like your cortisol, but it's close enough. So what it does is it goes back to the brain and says, wow, you have a boatload of kind of cortisol going around binding to receptors. So the brain goes, cool, I'm not going to tell the adrenal glands to make cortisol because it seems like you've got it under control with this, whatever, inhaler, nasal spray, injection, topical, whatever you've got going on is a steroid. And so your own production of cortisol goes down, 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 and you're just supplementing with this, whatever medication you're doing. So then when you go to test, what you find is exactly what you just said. When you go to test, you will see really low levels of your own cortisol. Your own cortisol goes way down. And so what people then try to do is try to figure out, how do I get my cortisol back up again? How do I get my adrenal glands back online again? How do I get that whole brain to adrenal connection happening? Unfortunately, as we know, exogenous steroids, meaning the cream, the nasal spray, the injection, what have you, they're potent. They're really potent, and it can be really hard to work against if you're actively on them. But if you have been weaning yourself off of them and you are trying to wean yourself off of, let's say, topical steroid cream or prednisone while you're trying to get your HPA back on back working again, that's when we can use things like we mentioned earlier. Like that's when you can use things like licorice. You can use things like adaptogens mm-hmm. to help your body sync back up and start to get its own cortisol factory going again.
So with this pattern, normally we'd see cortisol kind of spike in the morning and then slowly yep. throughout the afternoon to the nighttime, it'll come down. But yep. And I've seen this in clients who have topical steroid withdrawal and are dealing with that. It's really pretty flat.
It's very flat because that signal goes up to the brain and says, well, he or she is, they're doing it topically. So you don't need to make any. And the brain's like, cool, got it. No problem. And so your own cortisol just goes way, way, way down and flatlines.
What happens with the cortisone then?
So it depends on the person. So some people, we have these two enzymes that activate or deactivate cortisol. And so some people will, and especially initially when their cortisol is going down, their own body cortisol, that enzyme becomes really active and is trying to keep as much cortisol around as possible. And other people deactivate, other people go the other way. And so they actually form a lot more cortisone, trying to deactivate everything, all the exogenous stuff that's coming in as fast as possible. And you can be, depending on how long you've been on the topical steroid, you know, like length of time, dose you're on. There, I don't have a prediction. I can't tell you like, well, at 5 weeks or less, it doesn't work like that. Everybody's is different and what's going on. And that's why testing is really helpful. Like I am not on topical steroid cream or any kind of steroid cream, but I am a deactivator. I had my own labs run in the March timeframe, and I'm a massive deactivator. So my cortisone, my personal cortisone is much higher than my cortisol.
Well, I want to talk about that enzyme. So just to give everybody a sense of like how I even came about this, I do have clients that want to do a Dutch test, which is a really great urine test. You pee on a strip, let it dry, and you mail it back to Dutch. And there, you guys are just like, hey, great. We're going to measure all these different metabolites in it. And what was fascinating was I was on a consult with one of your doctors, and he had suggested that a client might want to like consider adding in a little bit of licorice root. And I was like, oh, no, can't do that. Cause you know, unfortunately like this person has this and they're, you know, they have, they're going through TSW and they're really concerned and they're very vehemently against using licorice root. They've already made me very clear of that because they don't want to be on any type of steroid. And I'm just literally saying to the doctor what this person has said to me. And he's like, that's not how that works. And I was like, okay, can you explain this to me so that I can explain this to my client? And so that's where he told me about 11 beta hydroxysteroid dehydrogenase. And we'll just call it 11 beta HSD for short. Everybody, this is an enzyme in your body. And so let's talk about what it is and what it does.
You have type 1 and you have type 2. So you will read about, if you are Googling this right now, it's 11 beta HSD1 or 11 beta HSD2. So 11 beta HSD1 activates. It turns cortisone into cortisol, turns everything on, turns cortisol on. 11 beta HSD2 does the opposite. It deactivates, it converts cortisol into cortisone. And you have concentrations of these enzymes in various places. So for example, in your kidneys, in your saliva glands, anywhere you have sweat glands, some of the intestines, you will have a lot more deactivation because your body is trying to protect you. So specifically like in the kidneys, you know, our kidneys regulate our blood pressure. And so if we have a lot of cortisol slamming into the kidneys, and binding to the glucocorticoid receptors and binding to the mineralocorticoid receptors, then we are more prone to blood pressure issues, high blood pressure. So the kidneys are like, I'm gonna turn you off, and it deactivates it into cortisone to protect itself, as an example. Other tissues have the opposite, like fat tissue, unfortunately, has a lot of activation. You activate a lot of cortisol in your fat tissue, which is sort of part of that cyclical problem, is that you have stress, you get the belly fat, you have the belly fat, you know, like you get more cortisol and you feel more stressed out or have other issues, which is so unfortunate. And so this enzyme, it's going back and forth the different parts of your body kind of all day long, 24/7, protecting you, deactivating you, activating you. When you've got an infection, you better believe everything's all systems go. You're reactivating, put the cortisol up, let's help you. When you're massively stressed out, you're not taking care of yourself, you've recently been sick, it's the opposite. Deactivate. Sit down, rest, relax, self-care. The body's trying to protect you.
So here's the thing where I think the waters get kind of muddy and unclear for everyone who doesn't know what to do. So as I said, with my client, she was afraid, because of all the things that she's read online on blogs, that licorice root is basically a steroid, and became very afraid of that. And this has been like, I'm in groups and I've searching the term licorice brings up a lot of the same response. Licorice is a steroid, avoid it at all costs. Is there truth to that?
So if you're a steroid, then you would have to be able to act like cortisol, right? You'd have to be able to be cortisol and bind glucocorticoid receptors, or be like prednisone, or be like fluticasone, or be like whatever zone you happen to be on that's causing you the steroid issues. Licorice activates enzymes. So it's an enzyme activator. It's not actually cortisol. it's an enzyme activator. So it helps you have more cortisol and slows the breakdown of cortisol. But it doesn't actually replace cortisol. Giving licorice is not the same as giving cortisol. It's not a bioidentical for cortisol. It's not a look-alike, close enough, it's not how it works.
And so with that being said, and if we go back to that HSD2, so that the number two that goes from cortisol and turns it off, basically I almost think of it as like soccer players on the field. Like you're an active player, if you're cortisol, and if you're benched, you're cortisone, and you can, you know, you can flip back and forth, whatever you want, but would it be necessarily a bad thing if you have cortisone in your system, but you don't necessarily have enough cortisol due to everything and this imbalance within the HPA axis? Wouldn't it be helpful to at least kind of like deactivate or say like, let's keep with the cortisol, like let's try and manage and stick with as much as we can?
So I get this question a lot. Like I'm a prime example. My free cortisol is lower. It's not flatline, but it's low. And my cortisone's higher. So I had a lot of people say to me, why don't you take licorice? Did you take licorice? Did you just take licorice to activate and give yourself the ability to make and to have more cortisol? And in my personal case, me as an N of one, I didn't, because it was a straight up Band-Aid. I knew why my cortisol was low. Mine was not because of steroid withdrawal. Mine was because of burnout and because I wasn't listening to myself, because I was pushing myself. I wasn't sleeping well. I'd worked really, really hard in 2020 and didn't take a lot of downtime. And I essentially did it to myself. So if I were to just say, in my particular case, I'm going to take licorice and get cortisol so I have more energy, but didn't change any of my habits or my mindset, I would, like, it can only last so long. It's, you know, like licorice is great, but it's not going to prop up a burnt out person who still continues to burn the candle at both ends. Mm. Now, somebody else is a different story completely. Let's say you are going through topical steroid withdrawal. You do have the flat line of cortisol. You're completely exhausted. You are more prone to inflammation because your cortisol is low. You're more prone to glucose problems because your cortisol is low. As you're going through the weaning down process and you have this flat cortisol, you may be a good candidate for licorice. You may be a good candidate because you have low cortisol and we're trying to get it to turn back on. We're trying to get the whole system, your brain, to tell your adrenals, let's make cortisol. Let's activate.
Yeah, I think part of the tricky thing here is a lot of times there is no step down with topical steroids. A lot of times people will recognize something's really wrong here. This is not eczema or psoriasis. Like this is something else. And they stop the steroids entirely. And and I totally understand. I completely understand. Everybody's journey is different. So in the case where you just totally pull the plug on that external cortisol all of a sudden, is that possibly an instance where you could consider licorice root?
Yeah. It is helpful to test first. Don't just randomly, you know, like I said, licorice does activate cortisol, slows the breakdown of it, and unfortunately can affect blood pressure and potassium depending on your dose, depending on how long. So, if you're going to actually seek out a supplement with a lot of milligrams, just be careful. Like maybe you should test first. But yes, that is an instance. If you have stopped your steroid cream and you are getting, you are right immediately into topical steroid withdrawal, you doing a little bit of licorice is probably going to help.
Yeah.
Now, again, people go, well, how much is a little bit, Carrie? Well, it depends, right? So in a lot of adrenal supplements, so the mixtures, it's generally under 100 milligrams. It's generally like 25 milligrams of licorice, 30 milligrams, 50 milligrams. But you can obviously find it much, much higher. And you can find it in teas. Obviously, you can find licorice tea, which, of course, is low dose as well. And so that, you know, we generally consider it okay. And in my patients that had this, I was like, okay, it's pretty good. I'm pretty safe. What does concern me is there are companies that make 600 milligram doses And people go on that and they go on it for an extended period of time, not realizing because they can buy it at Whole Foods or Amazon. And all of a sudden they're like, my heart is racing and I'm having all these problems and I don't know what I did to myself. I'm like, that's 600 milligrams is a lot.
I hope you found this episode informative. So far, remember, this is part one of a two-part conversation. Part two is in the next episode. For now, if you want to go check out any of the research and links and anything else that we have discussed, you can head on over to skinterrupt.com/203. And if you have any questions or comments, you can leave them there so we can keep the conversation going. And since there is so much controversy and confusion around licorice root usage in TSW, please make a point to share this episode with people you know who would really benefit from this information or who've been wondering if it's okay or not. You can also feel free to share this episode and this series that we're going to have here with your practitioner so that they too can educate themselves and also make more informed decisions about what they do offer clients like yourself, as well as other clients that they may see down the road who are struggling with TSW. And if you haven't done so yet, head on over to your podcast platform of choice, rate and review the show, then hit the subscribe button. That way you never miss our weekly dose of research, hope, inspiration, tips, strategies, case studies, and all sorts of other things that we can share with you to help you rebuild healthy skin. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you in the next episode.